This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Peter Bachman, President and CEO of USA Rice. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Peter Bachman of USA Rice next. America's 11,000 sugar beet and sugarcane farmers count on a strong U.S. sugar policy to keep American consumers supplied with an essential ingredient. Better yet, it's designed to cost taxpayers nothing. These farmers support more than 151,000 jobs throughout the sugar supply chain in both urban and rural communities. They contribute over $23 billion to the economy each year and help keep it sweet in America. Learn how the Farm Bill supports sugar crop farmers and workers at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Many commodity organizations were relieved when some Farm Bill provisions were included in the recent budget reconciliation legislation. With financial help on the horizon, Peter Bachman, President and CEO of USA Rice, says the improved safety net may save some rice farmers and their supporting industry.
Things in rice country have not been easy the last couple of years. This is a problem that really started back in 2020 when we saw supply chain challenges. We saw the invasion of Russia into Ukraine creating challenges for the grain world worldwide. We saw a lot of commodity prices really shoot through the roof. Rice didn't see that run up in price at that point in time, and we credit that to overproduction in India and other parts of Asia that, you know, have had excessive crops and continue to flood the world market with those crops. So our prices didn't go up because we didn't have any real shortfall at that time. And then as a result, you know, we had to go to bat over the last couple of years to ask for assistance because our farm safety net was not providing the safety net that we needed. That was using data from 2012 rather than 2020 or 2018. And therefore we had to get ad hoc assistance for our rice farmers, in 2022. December of 2022, we got a one-time $250 million infusion into the farm safety net, structure for rice. And that was paid out in 2023. And our members really saw that as a lifeline. And then back in 2024, you'll recall that all of the ag commodities came together to work on an additional ad hoc assistance program, which was birth ECAP, which was delivered in early 2025 after being passed in December of 2024. And rice farmers got roughly $200 million out of the $10 billion that was allocated for commodities. And so I think a lot of the ag lenders out there are keeping a close watch on the farm safety net, and they are, you know, conditionally approving credit lines for rice farmers, but it's been a tough couple of years, and we've seen more farm sales in the last year or 2 years than we have in the last two decades, and so that's definitely concerning for us, and all the more reason for getting this reconciliation bill passed early this month. That's a huge shot in the arm for us.
You're in a situation that it's not just the producer, it's the miller. It's the entire industry and all the jobs and the infrastructure that go with that. So if the farmer's in the trouble, then the question is, what about the rest of the industry? And then when I think about the farmer, where the average age of a farmer is higher than it's been, a lot of these people are burning through their retirement. And the question is, how far can they go before they throw in the towel?
That's absolutely right. We know that we're an integrated industry in terms of needing the farmer, the miller, the merchants, and end users all to be successful. But it starts with the farmer. And if our farmers aren't productive and they're not profitable and able to keep coming to the table and produce a crop every year, then none of the rest of the sectors are going to be successful if there's not a crop there for them to sell or to mill and transform into something else. And so, like we've seen with cotton in certain areas of the country, when the gin goes away, so does the rest of the production around it, because there's not that integrated system anymore and the infrastructure for them to be able to sell and get a value for their crop that is worth coming back to the table for. And so we don't want to see those rice mills dry up like we've seen cotton gins in certain areas dry up. And we're pretty closely centered where we have areas of the country where there's strong rice production. And if we start to lose mills in those areas, then we're going to lose the farms that go with them and many, many other businesses that rely on rice production in those small rural communities in the Mid-South, the Gulf, and in the Sacramento Valley of California.
So this is bigger, and I don't want to use the word just, but this is bigger than just farmers. This is a whole industry and infrastructure that's at stake.
That's right, and we've seen it challenge. In 2022, California had the worst drought situation than they've had in probably decades, where they were only able to plant 50% of their crop. The government allocated less than half of the water that they needed to grow their crop to farmers for that year. And so as a result of that, we saw a huge, huge threat to the infrastructure of the California rice industry when half of the Sacramento Valley couldn't be planted. It not only impacted the environmental side of things and the waterfowl habitat that's provided through rice farms, but it also economically, you know, really, really nailed those guys. And so thank the Lord that they were able to get water the next year, and the rains came throughout the winter and supplied us. But that type of threat is something that we're not immune to, and we know it can happen in other parts of the rice industry. And so when we lose that much production, that really threatens the rest of the sector all at once.
Peter, where is the largest amount of rice production in the world, and where is consumption?
From the beginning of time, pretty much, China was the largest rice producer in the world. A lot of people say rice originated there, and it developed there and became more domesticated from a wild plant. And so it made sense for them to be the largest producer until this year. And so this year, India took over as the largest producer of rice in the world. They're not the largest consumer. China still remains the largest consumer of rice in the world. The Philippines are a big importer of rice. And then India is the largest exporter by a long shot in terms of production and then what they need. Then they ship the rest of that out on the rest of the world. But yeah, India and the rest of Southeast Asia is where the main hub of rice production is. But the U.S., you know, we're pretty high up there in terms of production, far up on the list, I mean. But we are the fifth largest exporter typically.
So, Peter, where are the markets for rice? And I note that while you suggest we are an exporter, we're also an importer, too.
That's right. Yeah, the U.S. is a huge market for rice, both through the domestic channels, but also through import channels. The U.S. is good at consuming things, and rice has become more and more popular amongst the newer generations. And so we've got a growing population here of folks from all around the world that are historically rice eaters, and so that's grown and grown, and rice is in fast casual places. So yeah, the U.S. is big for rice consumption, but also Canada, same thing is happening. Mexico is traditionally a corn and bean focused culture, but they have also grown to be a huge rice importer over the last couple of decades. Central America, they produce rice, but they don't produce enough rice, so they're a big market for rice to be imported. And then other markets that you would expect would be Europe, the UK, and then throughout Africa, where they're in a food deficit and they need to import rice there because it's easy calories, easy to cook in large quantities, and it's pretty shelf stable. So it's a very popular food around the world. We try to use the talking point that we are the world's most consumed grain, and more than 50% of the world eats rice every single day. And while you Americans may not, you know, many, many cultures around the world do. And so we're definitely a crop that's in demand, but you know, there's a bunch of producers on six different continents that are all fighting for some of the same markets.
I would suggest not just with rice, but with all of agriculture commodities, there are two primary headwinds. One is the economics, another is the politics. And this administration has taken a pretty strong stance on trade. One of those is Japan, another South Korea, and basically lots of other trading partners in the globe. Are you encouraged to see this administration working on trade? And where are the fronts that you need a break, unfair subsidies or economics or others that are preventing your producers from capturing market share they should have a right to?
We are 100% behind what the administration is doing in terms of trade. You know, we know that not all organizations like ours may agree with this, but we feel that tariffs and the president's tariff strategy is the only way to actually get attention and get leverage in terms of making progress on trade deals in a bilateral way with many of these countries. We see opportunities in Japan. We see opportunities in Korea. Those are both existing markets for us. They buy up to a certain quantity of U.S. rice every year, but we would love to grow that. And we know we produce a quality product that they can use for processing, for table rice, many different things in those countries. And while they grow their own rice, they don't always have the exact kind that they need for whatever the job is. And we see other opportunities like in the UK and EU where there's a growing share of rice eaters there and they don't produce enough rice for themselves. And in the UK, they don't grow any rice, but they have a large and growing rice consumption, per capita consumption of rice. And so we're really encouraged by the president's tactics to try to grow that market share for us, and we think that we can benefit there. What we would love to see is, you know, more tariffs on big rice importers or import origins, and I'm talking about India, Thailand, Vietnam, Pakistan, China. We've seen tariffs on China start to work to slow down some of the imports into the U.S., but we haven't seen it slow down imports from India, Thailand, Vietnam, Pakistan yet. And so we would love to see a tougher stance. We didn't think that the reciprocal tariffs announced on April 2nd went far enough because a lot of markets will, the U.S. market will pay that tariff and keep importing the rice because they want it that badly. And it's coming in at a competitive rate because they're so subsidized in their country of origin. And so that's something that we've been really, really vocal about in terms of leveling the playing field. And every time the president talks about leveling the playing field, our ears perk up because this is exactly what we want to do. We can be the poster child for what he wants to do. We're an import sensitive commodity, but we also want to export. And so I think there's a way for us to have our cake and eat it too, and not only protect our domestic market from the growing share of imports, but also grow our export market. And we have enough rice here, and we can produce enough rice here to do both, to supply the domestic market and to export a substantial quantity. Right now, we're at about 50% of our market is being exported.
The evidence of your challenges don't just come from the administration or from your own words. A noted House Ways and Means Chair Jason Smith calling for a Section 332 investigation and was clear that unfair subsidies and trade barriers were headwinds for your growers and your industry.
Yes, the Section 332 study that was initiated by Chairman Smith last year and came out earlier this year was a huge win for us. We had that study done in 2015, a similar study done in 2015. So much in the world has changed since then. And so having this updated study hit this year was important to be able to lay the groundwork for action against countries like India and Thailand and Vietnam that do unfairly subsidize their producers, over-subsidize their producers. They violate the WTO commitments that their countries have made, and then they flood the world with their rice, essentially. And, you know, we need to use that data to help encourage the administration and lawmakers to impose whatever actions necessary to turn around this trend and protect our domestic market.
So let's turn attention to the reconciliation bill. It wasn't a farm bill, but there were a lot of farm provisions in the reconciliation. And from the price loss coverage, some improvement, just shy of $17 for one variety, over $24 for some others. But the one problem that I see here is those payments can't go until November 2026. So while there is help that's on the way, there's no help in the immediate term right now for those producers that are strapped.
That's something we're definitely keeping an eye on. We're hearing from our membership about that. We've always known that that's the way it works. I think the best thing that we could have done was to advocate to Congress to make sure that the 2025 crop year was included in this reconciliation bill, because if we had to wait in a typical farm bill, they would have pushed it for baseline and CBO purposes. They would have pushed implementation for the 2026 crop year onward to save money. However, they spent the extra money to make it apply to the 2025 crop year, which is what we're in right now. And as you mentioned, once that crop is marketed over the next year, the prices will be tracked, and that will determine what our PLC payment will be in November 2026. So while it is over a year that growers will have to wait, I think the signal it sends to bankers is that help is coming, and that this will keep a lot of folks in the farming business in the coming year. Even if they have losses this year, their bankers are going to make the decision to give them credit next year, their operating loans for next year, so that they're able to keep doing what they love doing and stay in business. And so I think this happening at the time that it did is huge for us and huge for the agriculture industry as a whole in the U.S. because bankers have been on edge, farmers have been on edge, and now knowing that this help is coming for this crop year will just really give a lot of relief out there. And we would love to see some immediate wins by the administration on trade that will help to turn around our current commodity markets so that we can get some help in the marketplace for this year, this calendar year, before long, and we don't have to wait until 2026 to see those payments come in.
Peter, a few days ago, we had Shirley Bloomfield from NTCA here on the program, and I'm drawing a parallel. After spending literally billions on internet access for rural areas in the country, there's a question of the maps that we have, whether they're accurate or not, and who actually has service and who doesn't. And I correlate that then to rice producers and other producers of crops, the young farmers especially, that have come in that are raising rice, but they've not been able to include that in base acres. There is no record, accurate record on base acres, and you get an opportunity in this legislation to add base acres.
Yeah, I think for rice farmers, we are largely utilizing the base acres that exist out there. We, unlike some commodities, we do have a pretty big grasp on that. We haven't added too many new acres since the last update and the last addition of acres, of base acres, through the farm bill process. But I do think that this is a great opportunity for some younger farmers that may be farming land outside of base territory that they can add that in. You know, there's going to be calls by some growers, including rice growers, that wanted to have a voluntary base acre update where they could switch maybe corn base or soybean base to something else that they've been growing on that same land. However, this opportunity is going to open up to new and beginning farmers and folks that have been farming without getting any sort of safety net assistance in the past. And so we're optimistic that that's going to benefit at least a marginal amount of our membership. And we're excited that Congress included that because, you know, that's one of the arguments that's been out there for a long time is that only the folks with base get to benefit from the programs that exist. And this will kind of expand the tent a little bit, and we'll see how it's implemented, and we'll be following the regulations and the formula as it comes out in the coming months from FSA.
Peter, will the MAP and FMD fund increase help you to gain market share?
I definitely think so. We've been following and pushing for this doubling of MAP and FMD, or at least an increase in the last two farm bills, and it's way overdue to get some sort of a injection here. We've got help back in 2019 through the Agricultural Trade Promotion Program that Secretary Perdue implemented, and now we got help again through Secretary Vilsack's Regional Agricultural Promotion Program funds that went out last year. And so this year, you know, now we have this on the horizon to know that there could be essentially a doubling of the program through the new trade promotion funds included in reconciliation. USA Rice is a beneficiary of both MAP and FMD funding. Historically, we've been able to deliver huge results for our industry over the years through opening up new markets and expanding our markets overseas in more than we operate in more than 25 markets around the world. And, you know, that may be smaller than some other commodities, but we really see this as a huge opportunity for us to grow our market share in some of these countries that or add resources in countries that we haven't been able to in the past. So that's another big win that's kind of understated. Everybody was so excited about the Title I and commodity program assistance that the trade promotion assistance will be, you know, another huge benefit to many, many commodities out there.
Some are talking about a skinny farm bill. I don't think I've ever seen a skinny farm bill. So, Peter, let's talk about Farm Bill 2.0 and House Chairman, Ag Chairman Thompson is talking about September. And Senator Bozeman says they're going to survey both sides of the aisle. What's left on the table that agriculture needs, specifically that rice farmers need in the rest of the farm bill?
I think there's just some little missing pieces around the edges that could be included in that skinny farm bill. We're thinking through a couple of conservation proposals that are out there that didn't make it into reconciliation, some agricultural research priorities, and then some other specialty programs that live in the miscellaneous title that could benefit us tangentially. And so I'm sure there will be some fixes that are needed for the reconciliation package, small technical fixes that could be included in such a skinny farm bill. And, you know, we're optimistic that Chairman Thompson will be right and he'll be able to deliver on September and getting something together. I do think that there's a lot of goodwill out there on both sides of the aisle to get something done. And, you know, the best case scenario, this would be attached to some vessel that's moving, maybe a funding bill, whether it's a CR or a full year funding bill, I don't know, but that's the likely scenario that we'll see. And there's obviously some programs that need to be renewed, reauthorized for another year or extended for several years, whatever Congress decides to do. And so there will be pressure for Congress to deliver on that by the end of the calendar year, I think. And so they will have their plenty of challenge to get that done, but I have full confidence that both Chairman Bozeman and Chairman Thompson can work across the aisle and make this a bipartisan effort to get done.
Well, Peter Bachman, we want to thank you very much for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Thank you for your work on behalf of the agriculture industry. Certainly, we hope that you find improvements down the line. This is Open Mic, and Peter, today you get the last word.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I want to reiterate thanks to our champions in Congress, Chairman Thompson, Chairman Bozeman, Chairman Jason Smith, and Chairman Crapo for all of the provisions that they included in the reconciliation bill that passed last week. I think that's a huge boon for our industry and for all of agriculture to be able to have that certainty for the next couple of years in terms of farm safety net. That's a huge weight off of our shoulders and Congress's shoulders, and I think that's going to really help inform a lot of farming decisions and lending decisions for ag lenders over the next 2 to 3 years. And so that's something we're really grateful for. However, that's not the end of our challenges. We've got other challenges out there, especially in trade, and we're really encouraged by what President Trump and USTR Ambassador Greer are doing in terms of leverage, using tariffs for leverage in order to try to level the playing field for U.S. manufacturing, which includes U.S. agriculture, and also trying to open up some of those markets that we haven't been able to get access to for a long time. And so we're going to continue to push them to get some of those trade wins done out there. And we're optimistic about the next couple of years, and we're not going to let up. We've got our challenges, like I said, but we're a resilient but small industry, and we punch above our weight class, and we're going to continue to do that. So thank you for the opportunity today.
Our thanks to Peter Bachman, President and CEO of USA Rice, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance. America's sweetest industry creates jobs and provides a sustainably produced food ingredient. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.